This is the time of the year when the U.S. Supreme Court gets into the news a lot by announcing decisions in cases heard months ago. Sometimes the news is a bit different, that the court chose not to hear a case. That is the situation with a case involving Klamath Basin water. The Supreme Court chose not to take up Bailey versus United States. That leaves a lower court decision in place, ruling that farmers who did not get their water allotments are not entitled to money instead. The case dates back almost two decades and has been watched closely by the Klamath Water Users Association. Two guests from KWUA join us. Paul Simmons is the executive director. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
And Tricia Hill is the president of the Klamath Water Users Association. Welcome, Tricia.
Thank you and good morning.
So the name is mostly self-explanatory, Tricia, but give people who don't know it a sketch of the association and what it's about.
Klamath Water Users Association is a nonprofit that represents irrigators in the Klamath Project to secure things that we need to be able to farm. So that includes things like water, but also we work on power issues, water quality, so kind of a breadth of any place that water intersects with farming in the basin.
Okay, but you answer the question then. It is, yeah, they have to be connected to the Klamath Project. This is your main concern.
Yes.
Okay. Paul, give us, if you would, the basic facts of the case here.
In 2001, the federal government announced in April that there would not be water available from Upper Klamath Lake or the Klamath River for irrigation in the Klamath Project. That was the first time that had occurred in the almost 100-year history of the project at that time. So the basis for that decision was to provide elevations of water in Upper Klamath Lake and flows in the Klamath River for threatened and endangered species. The plaintiffs in the case filed a lawsuit claiming that because water rights are property rights under Oregon law, the government's decision to reallocate that water under the Endangered Species Act required compensation. In other words, that case took as an assumption that the government had the authority to do that and said that if society makes that kind of decision, it must compensate the holders of the property right for the property that was taken.
Mm-hmm. Now, there were 13 farmers, 14 irrigation organizations on the original complaint. Did Lonnie Bailey of Bailey versus United States end up front just alphabetically at some point?
Well, Lonnie Bailey is the lead named plaintiff. The irrigation districts ultimately dropped out of the case. The claims were, at that point, only claims of persons who are landowners, farmers, and it was a class action. That didn't occur until something like 16 years into the case.
Mm-hmm. So the year we're talking about here, Tricia Hill, 2001 was the year of the Bucket Brigade, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And so this is, but the obviously the decision that generated the Bucket Brigade and the anger that led to it was all about the fact that we're talking no water whatsoever for the farmers.
Right. It was a complete shut off of the project until midsummer, when essentially it was too late for a lot of crops to receive any benefit from irrigation water.
Well, so given that, what came out of the affected farms that year?
A huge, I guess, from a social standpoint, I mean, there were a huge number of bankruptcies. That year, we had several suicides, lost a lot of small businesses. Some of our small towns just really never recovered.
So, Paul, the legal approach, I mean, takings became a much-used term about that time in history. Would you give us an overview of the doctrine a little more broadly?
Well, the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution provides that the federal government can't take property without just compensation. So that's what it's all about. And in fact, you're right. Around that time, there were a number of cases involving water, most of them in California, that asserted takings claims. But this is a typical situation. I mean, the government takes property for highways, and typically they or post offices, and typically they negotiate a price. But if they don't, they can still do it by condemning it. If they take property without going through any sort of condemnation, that's known as inverse condemnation, and the person whose property was taken can file a lawsuit seeking compensation in the Court of Federal Claims in Washington, D.C. That's right. What happened here.
Which is, yeah, just the court that was involved here. This was the actual trial-level court, right?
Trial-level courts in Washington, D.C. That's the only court in the United States where you can file such a case.
But here again, so the doctrine is not that the property itself is taken, but the value of it or the use of it is taken?
No, the property was taken. So in this case, the water right, the right to use the water was taken in 2001.
All right, so not the physical property, but the right to that water, that property.
Yeah, and there's an interesting discussion about whether it's a physical taking or a regulatory taking, and it was determined to be a physical taking, which was a good ruling for the plaintiffs, but other parts of the case led to no liability.
All right, we were talking about a water case from the Klamath Basin that the Supreme Court opted not to hear, Bailey versus United States, which ends up with the ruling as was delivered in lower courts, which was that the farmers are not entitled to compensation. We are talking to Paul Simmons and Tricia Hill, respectively Executive Director and President of the Klamath Water Users Association. You can join the conversation here on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You were starting to give some indication there about the success or not of the takings doctrine in other legal cases. Has there been some, Paul?
The first case that a lot of people know about was one that came from the Tulare Lake Basin in California, and I think that was actually decided in 2001. And in that specific case, the court ruled that the farmers there were entitled to compensation or the districts. There's been another case based on breach of contract where some districts were awarded damages in a certain amount. Other cases, the court has either denied relief or the cases are still pending. Or in one case, the court said that the plaintiff hadn't actually been injured yet. That was Casita's case. But so it has been a lively area of activity, mostly driven by the Endangered Species Act and the reallocation of irrigation water.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, the water was set aside for the Lost River and Short-Nosed Sucker. Is that correct?
Yes, and the Coho Salmon and the Klamath River.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay. What took so long, Paul, for this case to get to where the Supreme Court could deny the petition to hear it? I mean, 19 years is exceptionally long, even for a federal case, isn't it?
It is, and so you're clear. I wasn't the counsel for the case until last November, but a few things happened. There was a turnover of judges. In total, there were three judges that heard the case, and that in itself creates some inefficiencies. There was a decision denying relief in 2005. That decision was appealed to the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, which then referred some questions to the Oregon Supreme Court, which is a procedure available in federal courts to ask a state Supreme Court questions about state law. So that happened, and then the Oregon Supreme Court gave its answer. Then the Federal Circuit reversed the prior decision and sent it back. Then there were further motions to dismiss by the federal government on procedural technical grounds based on new Supreme Court authority, and so on and so forth. But eventually it went to trial in January of 2017.
Wow. So 16 years almost after the original issue.
That's a pretty long time.
Very long time, yeah. So Tricia Hill, not the only legal maneuvers, obviously, involving Klamath Water over those 19 years. What else has happened to change the relationship of farmers and irrigators and water over that time?
Well, we've had, it seems like every other year we have a new biological opinion which changes the rules regarding how much water needs to be kept in Upper Klamath Lake for the fish that live there versus how much water needs to go downriver for the salmon. So that's even though maybe it's not going through the court process, it's still a governmental legal process. And then based on those biological opinions, over the last several years, we've had several lawsuits filed by tribes and others regarding those biological opinions and their belief that they provide or don't provide enough water to protect the species.
All right. And you mentioned those get revised fairly. This is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in conjunction with the Bureau of Reclamation. Is that right?
Yeah, and also National Marine Fisheries Service as well.
Okay, yeah, or NOAA Fisheries. We seem to disagree on what that gets called from day to day. So, but this is an interesting part of it, though. You're mentioning two different living conditions for fish. So there's water that stays in the lake for those fish, water that needs to go down the river for the coho. Either case, though, if the water is needed in either place, it doesn't get to the farmers generally?
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's part of the reason that Bailey is so disappointing that we didn't have the Supreme Court look at it is because we've been using this water to go stay in the lake or go downriver, and that management philosophy hasn't actually helped those species. And so we're in a place where, because the easiest button to push is to take water away from the project instead of looking at other influences that maybe we could put resources into helping those species actually recover. The other disappointing thing that ultimately happens with that biop is that people end up thinking of it as a three-legged stool. It's the farmers, you know, versus fish downriver, fish in the lake. But here on the Klamath Project, our agriculture is really uniquely tied to our wildlife refuges. We actually have farms on national wildlife refuges. Many of us work in concert with those refuge managers to provide habitat for migratory waterfowl. And so there's kind of that aspect of things as well that kind of gets forgotten in the mesh, that when we're talking about water for ag, we're also talking about water for waterfowl as well.
So that level of decision that was reached in 2001, where the government said it's all got to stay there for the fish, the farmers get nothing, has it happened to that extent since that time?
It hasn't. We were close this year. We had our April forecast as far as inflows to Upper Klamath Lake was severely declined as to the May 1st forecast, and so we had a scramble in May where we thought we would be shut off sometime in June, which is disastrous because so many people had already planted crops. I mean, you're looking at thousands of dollars per acre and putting a crop in that if you can't have water after June, you're going to get zero return. So that was our May. It was a rough month, but then the forecast improved, and we had some support within the administration and ended up being able to restore our allocation back to our original April number.
We are talking about the recent decision of the U.S. Supreme Court not to take up a water case out of the Klamath Basin, which essentially leaves in place a decision that when farmers don't get water, they don't get compensation in return for that. Tricia Hill is the president of the Klamath Water Users Association. Paul Simmons is the executive director. You have time to join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Paul, you mentioned you did represent the plaintiffs at some point in the proceedings. Is that right?
Beginning last November, that's correct.
So after the trial court and in the appellate actions,
correct. Although I'm certainly well aware, and I attended the trial. I've been around a long time. Some people would say too long, and the Klamath Project, and so I did serve as a resource to the people that were handling that case for a while.
Now, the statement from the Klamath Water Users Association after the Supreme Court denial mentions fundamental misunderstanding and misapplications of Western water law. What do you mean by that?
Well, so the ruling here by the courts was to the effect that the property, to the extent that water right was a property right, it was not actually taken because there are senior water rights of tribes both in the Upper Klamath Lake and the Klamath River, such that there was not really a right to divert the water in the first place. So, you know, the case really isn't about whether tribes do or do not have water rights. It's about how water rights are adjudicated, quantified, and administered in the western states. And so in this case, we would say that if there are such rights, there's a process to prove them up, and then to have them administered. And when they're administered, you don't just go shut off one party. You shut off the most junior water right in the system. In a nutshell, that is it. But I think it's important to realize, too, that you know this process of quantification of water rights takes place before anyone's water is regulated off in a due process court proceeding, whereas here the water was just taken based on administrative decisions of agency staffs. And then after the fact, the court said, well, that was a water right, it turns out. And that's just not the way water rights works in the western United States.
With the adjudication of a couple of years ago that resulted in the Klamath tribes getting a water right number one, will this situation potentially happen again or not?
It could happen again. I mean, understand that the Klamath tribes water right as it currently was established in the state adjudication in 2013 cannot now be asserted to curtail the Klamath Project, and only potentially after a state court proceeding, will that even be possible? Certainly, the facts of 2001 occurred before there was any state decision in the adjudication. That may affect any case in various ways, positive for the water users, and it would very much depend on what the outcome is for the Klamath tribes in Klamath Lake, because there was, as of the time of that decision, there was a pending settlement, a contingent settlement between us and the Klamath tribes in the United States, such that we didn't participate in the litigation of that issue with regard to Upper Klamath Lake water rights. We will going forward.
Okay. A lot of piles of paperwork and a lot of details involved here with different bodies of water and different rights to the water and different concerns about different kinds of fish.
Yeah, very much so. And I think for almost anyone involved would say that they don't really regard litigation as the way to bring this to conclusion or to find stability. And that's the way. That's the reason that we and other parties in the past did try to develop a settlement that would provide stability for all concerned. But that didn't prevail, and we're kind of back where we were a dozen years ago.
Tricia Hill, you mentioned that it looked like water was going to get shut off potentially in June this year, and that did not happen. But there was that shutdown and fed up rally in the Klamath Basin on May 29th. Do you think that helped convince people that you needed water further into the year?
Yeah, I think it did. I think it also raised awareness regarding kind of how bad things are here. I mean, we're not successfully providing for communities from the top of the basin all the way down to the bottom of the basin. And it's time for a change. We need a new way of looking at things, and so hopefully we'll get that.
Even in good years, though, Tricia, is there enough water for fish and farms?
Right now, we have to have about 120 to 130% of snowpack to get a full to get our max amount of water under the current biological opinion.
Okay.
So it has to be a pretty wet year for our farmers here to be full, and for our that ground getting farmed then supports all of our communities up here in the Klamath Falls, Malin, Tule Lake, Merrill area.
All right, that's quite a number, and that's a really helpful one to know. So basically, you have to have 20 to 30% more than a great year to be able to get everybody who needs water to get water.
Yep, in a typical year. I mean, summer patterns can change that, but if we were to have a dry-ish summer, yeah, that's what we would need.
All right. Well, we'll explore this from the side of the tribes in a few minutes away. We've been talking with Tricia Hill, the president of the Klamath Water Users Association, and Paul Simmons, the executive director of KWUA, about the decision by the Supreme Court not to take up Bailey versus United States. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
All right, take care. Bottom of the hour on the exchange, here's today's edition of Marketplace Tech.